Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Welcome to part three of our analysis of the debate on the evolution of the eye between a University of California professor, Dr. Aguilar, Gary Aguilar, and Real Science Radio. Fred, it's been interesting. One part for me was chilling. It was chilling to me when Gary Aguilar said to me, speaking of you Christians, he said, you need to be set aside. And that was just chilling.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, because atheists have, slaughtered tens of millions of people just in the 20th century. Tens of millions.
Yeah, far more than World War I, World War II. Mao Zedong, I think he's responsible for 50 million.
Well, 60 million. At Red China and Korea and
Joseph
the
Stalin,
Soviet
40
Union.
Million killed. I mean, that's a huge number. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it is chilling.
And they were all atheist evolutionists. Hitler, you know, believed in evolution.
Yeah, and so it's just chilling because they don't have a God to answer to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're done, you're done. They think it's oblivion.
Yep.
So it's chilling to hear a professor at University of California, San Francisco, say, you need to be set aside. It's not tolerance, diversity, free speech, respect for all views. It's none of that. You know, the beautiful people, quite often, it's chilling.
It is.
To hear what actually comes
and
out of them.
And it's scary that people like that have been in power before in the past, you know, with that mentality.
Yeah, extremely intolerant. Mm-hmm. Imagine on our universities what students put up with these days. And many students turn out just like him. So why don't we continue with this from 2 years ago. I've been enjoying it. Now, tonight, Fred, you and I are speaking live in Denver. Come out for a live Real Science Radio.
Yeah, one of our list shows. It's the list of evidences against the Big Bang. I think you'll really enjoy it. I know, Bob, you've been working real hard on some great some slides and animations and a whole bunch of stuff. A big, long video. Just kidding. I mean, it's going to be great. There's a lot of work put into it.
We'll have a good time.
Yeah, it should be fun.
And
the evidence is huge. And as you've noted before, we rank very high on Google if you do a search for evidences against the Big Bang.
Yeah, that's right. And it's at 7 o'clock. And then tomorrow night is a Voice for Brady concert in Denver, Church in the City. Four of the singers from NBC's The Voice are throwing a concert, a benefit concert for Be a Voice for Brady, because on November 4th, Election Day, there's a statewide ballot amendment that many in our audience, Fred, many of our listeners helped to get signatures, 140,000 signatures to put a pro-life personhood amendment on the ballot.
Yes, on 67.
Yes.
I need one of those for my yard because there's somebody in my neighborhood who has one. And I'm like, I don't. That's wrong.
Fred, we'll get you one. Colorado Right to Life will get you one. Yes, on 67. Okay, so let's continue with the professor from UC San Francisco, Dr. Gary Aguilar, versus Real Science Radio on the evolution of the eye.
Very simple to more complex and more perfect, right?
That's because we look at things like hagfish, and I would direct your listeners to an article in Scientific American about the evolution of the eye by Trevor Lamb, L-A-M-B, in the July 2011 edition of the Scientific American. I'm not going to go quoting, you know, Lamb here, Professor Lamb, on a lot of the issues, because it's somewhat pointless. I mean, the issue is, it's very clear from, as he discusses here, lamprey and other type of ancestral eyes, that as you go from lower orders of animals to higher orders of animals, eyes change. And in fact, you see, in the case of the lamprey, eyes that were at a certain stage of development apparently then retreated, you know. And there is a good biological basis for why the retinal photoreceptors are on the inner layer of the eye, and it has to do with how the eye evolved from essentially the ectoderm, the outer layer of the tube. And it has to do with more how this developed, but it developed that way for many types of animals, you know, apart from insects. But, you know, you're setting up premises and which are totally uncertain and saying, okay, except this is true, then the following is true. I've seen this done in abuses of the Kennedy assassination by prosecuting attorneys and other things. They set certain premises, and they ask you questions based on a premise which you can't possibly know is true. That's flawed logic, Bob, and you know it.
Gary, would this be true? If there are no small steps between monochromatic and dichromatic...
We don't know what small steps might have occurred hundreds of thousands of years
ago.
That's
why I used the conditional.
logically, engineers who design vision systems. I studied vision systems at Arizona State University.
Congratulations.
400-level computer science class. If there are no small transitions between monochromatic and dichromatic, if there are no small steps, if it's one or the other, then would that falsify the Darwinian mechanism that requires small steps?
First of all, I don't know the answer to the question, number one. Number two, I don't know that there are any small steps between one another. And
if there are none.
It's a ridiculous question.
Gary, if there are no small steps, would that give you pause to say, you know what? Richard Dawkins, Charles Darwin, Schwab, everybody, even Russell Fernald, says there has to be.
Jesus Christ is right in ordering. God is right in ordering the murder of babies of innocents.
If there are no small steps, and all these guys say there has to be small steps for Darwinism to function, would you then say, you know what, maybe Darwin was wrong? Would you say that?
I think that modern evolutionary biologists think that Darwin was wrong about a lot of stuff.
I mean, his fundamental claim that tiny incremental changes produce big changes. If there are no tiny changes to get you from monochromatic to dichromatic, would you then agree that Darwin is wrong on his central claim?
Bob, I don't know enough about the data to venture an opinion, but I'll ask you this.
Okay.
Can you know for certain? Let me put the horse on your saddle. If the Earth is billions of years old, as most people think, I mean, if you look at the moon, for example, and you see a lot of craters on the moon, and we have been following the moon nightly every night, at least 100, 150 years, and we see how often objects hit that moon that create craters like that.
Right.
The answer to that is not very often. You look at the moon, and there are tons of craters up there. So one can just extrapolate by how frequently the moon is hit by things to imagine how long ago most of those craters had to have been made, and 6,000 years, 7,000 or 10,000 years doesn't even close to it. It's obviously hundreds of millions of years you have created the craters that we see on the moon today with the frequency with which things are hitting the moon. Well, now, of course, you'll say, oh, God created the moon with all those nice little craters. And, of course, that's a hypothesis that no one can disprove. It's not
Stop the tape. Opinion. Stop the tape. Yes, all right. Fred.
Order the hydroplate video.
Yeah, right? Because we talk a lot about the moon.
Yeah.
And, Fred, NASA has learned from inspection of a moon of Jupiter that secondhand craters – impactor hits, and then it throws up debris. Secondhand craters formed by the debris from the single impactor lead to other craters accounting for 95% of small craters.
Wow, 95%.
And a significant percentage of medium-sized craters. So that's pretty significant. So that sort of affects your calculation.
Oh, absolutely.
But also the assumption is the craters formed at the same rate that we see them today.
That's an assumption.
Which is an assumption that we can show is false, but also that one side of the moon, the near side, is really pummeled and the far side is sprinkled. And so we cover that in the global flood video.
Yeah, the breaking up of the fountains of the great deep and all that
all
earth
the debris
material
ejected from the fountains of the great deep.
Pummeling the moon.
Beat the moon to a pulp.
And then finding algae on the space station. I mean, all these things are fighting
so great,
in space.
Right?
It is awesome.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, Dr. Aguilar said that, you know, he criticized you for, you know, like accepting the premise and referred to the Kennedy assassination. Well, that's what he's doing with his thing with the moon. He's accepting the premise that the rate of the asteroids or meteorites hitting the moon is a constant
rate. And contrary evidence, my experience, Dr. Aguilar and 10,000 like him, completely uninterested in reading the contrary evidence. Mm-hmm. Fred, you read the secular evolutionary publications constantly. I do. I've probably read 500 times more from the secular scientist than Aguilar's read from creation scientists.
That's right. In fact,
and
it's
so
the,
I
it's
read
the secular,
both sides.
That's right. And it's the secular scientists that do a lot of our work for us, right?
Yeah, they all work for Walt Brown.
Yeah, they work for Walt Brown. But, hey, I noticed in this last sequence, he again brought up this canard about life goes from simple to complex. And then he talks about the lamprey, and he says, and in that case, the eye retreated. So, hey, make up your mind. If it's going from simple to complex, it sounds like you're saying it goes to simple to complex and back to simple. You know,
yeah, they do naive natural selection. Evolution dumbed down. Evolution for dummies is what kids are taught in college. The real theory of evolution is wildly contorted.
Yes.
To try to actually explain the data. in the fossil record.
So you need to get the horse back on your saddle, Bob.
Yeah, I noticed that too, Fred.
But you're making it a point. You're asking for a premise about something. So if I put the horse, the saddle on your horse,
we got it right that time.
If we assume from just, you know, geologic data, other evolutionary data, and the appearance of the craters on the moon, that the Earth is the billions of years old that we think it is, and living things have been here for 500 million years or so. And can you, if that's true, then can we know whether there were small incremental steps? Is it not possible that there could have been incremental steps 100 million years ago, 200 million years ago?
Okay, I'll respond to your moon comment first, and then incremental
steps.
Okay,
but if it's true, let's just take the hypothesis. If it's true that the Earth is hundreds of millions of years or billions of years old, and that living forms have been out there 500 million years, is it not possible that there could be incremental steps between monochronism and dichronism that we don't know about?
No, it's not possible.
What if we've been here for billions of years? I'll address that. If it is logically untenable, if there are actually no physiological steps between monochromatic and dichromatic, if there are none, then it doesn't matter if you're here for a quadrillion years, there are no steps. And I'm asserting that, and brighter minds than mine will need to prove this or disprove it.
It's your job.
But I'm asserting that there are no steps between monochromatic and dichromatic, and that this challenge proves Charles Darwin was wrong.
You've absolutely misstated the argument, and it's so beautifully done. This is why Christians are Christians. They believe all this sort of nonsense. What I'm saying is, if we have been here for billions of years, is it not possible, if in fact steps are required to go from monochronism to dichronism, and I'm not even sure that they are required to. Some people may say they do. Sometimes these people are disproven. Maybe they don't have to be. Maybe it could have taken one giant leap.
Stop the tape. So, Fred, this is why we say that they believe in magic.
Yeah.
Maybe there are no steps between monochromatic and dichromatic. Engineers looking at these complex biological symptoms are in awe of the sophistication and the complexity.
Yeah, and he said, well, isn't it possible? Just assume that you have these billions of years. No, it's not possible, because we know that from information science. You can't build up information by a blind, random, mistake-riddled process.
Yeah, yeah.
It can't happen. It'll do the opposite. It'll tear down information.
Right. Like if you had Microsoft Windows and Apple's OS X, right? You have these two operating systems. So just randomly start to switch code back and forth. See how that turns out.
Yeah.
Randomly mutate your operating system on your, let's say your cell phone, your Android or your iPhone. Just take a magnet and start to randomly change the bits. See how that works out for you. It's a delusional worldview.
And do that a billion, trillion, gazillion times over a gazillion years.
And see how much better it gets.
And you're going to end up with DOS from Windows.
Yeah, right. And so to think that, well, maybe there are no steps to go from monochromatic to dichromatic. He's supposed to be a thinking human being who's a college professor. Mm-hmm. And to think that, well, maybe there are no steps. Maybe you just have an offspring and it has color vision. It's juvenile. It's a caricature. It's a cartoon.
He's proving that
version.
Evolution is not science. It's a religion.
It's a religion adhered to by blind faith.
That's right. By a blind faith. That's right.
So who is looking at the hard scientific issues, and who is imagining
how things will work? Imagining, exactly.
Right. So it's just so interesting.
Is it possible that those steps could have occurred hundreds of millions of years ago and not be apparent today?
No.
If the Earth is billions of years old, is it not possible?
I assert if it's not possible today, it was not possible then.
Oh.
Gary, let me ask you.
Perfect.
Yeah. Gary,
you're saying because we don't have any, you know, I don't even know anything about the science of what you're talking about. It doesn't matter. But you're saying because we don't have any evidence for this having happened like right now, what we can see, that it could not have happened before. And I'm saying, but you don't know what happened prior to 7 or 10,000 years.
Well, you know a lot about rods.
What happened if it happened 300 million years ago? Oh, well.
I'm
asserting that if it doesn't happen now, it didn't happen then. That's absurd. How do you know what didn't happen 300 million years ago?
Stop the tape.
How do you know what happened 300 million years ago?
Turn it around. Fred, Dr. Aguilar is resisting the concept of a logical argument. If there are no intermediary steps logically, then there are none. He can't process that argument. And you know how we've sort of been joking that he's been advocating marijuana legalization for decades? He's San Francisco, UCLA, UC San Francisco professor. Well,
I have a theory.
As the conversation, now we're going to start talking about rods and cones, which should be his forte.
Yep.
He's totally confused. He will simply be totally confused. He'll criticize me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Then he'll repeat what I just said and affirm it. You know, I've talked to a lot of potheads in my life.
The clues are building, Bob.
It's
I
like
a theory.
It's like he's a functional drunk, but he's a pothead.
Yes.
And he simply can no longer think. And when you're going to hell and you've lost the clear use of your faculties, that's really dangerous. And so that's another reason why Real Science Radio, we did our show on marijuana, and we're getting ready to do an update on that from a year ago. Doug McBurney and I filling in for Fred Williams on a future show. But
that'll be great.
Just go to realscienceradio.com/pot, P-O-T. It will blow your mind, the evidence of the negative effects of marijuana. It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. In fact, the latest report, Fred, teenagers 63% less likely to complete high school, 8-to-1 more likely to use other illegal drugs, 7 times more likely to attempt suicide.
Wow.
For teenagers who use pot regularly. Real horrific. Lowers IQ permanently. All these major studies by universities that tend to be pro-pot.
Yep.
So, okay, let's continue. I'm assuming you know a lot about rods and cones, and that rods are used generally to distinguish outlines and get either dark or light. And cones.
No, Bob.
Go ahead. You know, explain. Tutor me.
When people are colorblind, they have excellent acuity. Not just outlines. It's just not light and dark. Cats have mostly rods. So do dogs. They don't see color the way we see it.
So rods generally give us light or dark, and the cones.
No. Rods give us vision, including sharp vision, also light and dark. Sharp, you know.
I thought I just said sharp, and you said I was wrong.
You said light and dark. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Light and dark in the outlines of shapes. There's pre-processing that goes on in our retina. And
yeah, of course there is. Yeah,
and we send an outline of shapes over the optic nerve to our processing center in our brain, or visual processing center. So you have rods and cones in something that's dichromatic. And the data from those two
trichromatic.
Different... What?
Trichromatic.
We're trichromatic. Some creatures are dichromatic, right?
That's true. But yeah. You're talking about humans. So you said dichromatic. Right. You actually meant
I'm only going. I'm trying to walk before we run. I'm just going from monochromatic to dichromatic. So you have these rods and cones. They're putting out outputs, and they have to be then assembled to be put together for the survival advantage of the organism. And when the organism's brain, let's say it's an insect or a reptile, when that information gets to its brain, it's not, and you could explain this to the audience, it's not seeing a projection of a fire in front of it or of a flower. It's getting a rush of these chemical electrical signals. And so its brain then has to somehow use symbolic logic to interpret this data stream to rebuild a mental image of what it's looking at, right?
Right.
Okay, now here's the challenge for you. When there is no eye and an eye is going to evolve, imagine that data stream. It's like noise on your TV screen. It's like putting your hand under your kitchen faucet and turning it on. And encoded in that water hitting your hand is an image. And it's an image that's changing every second. And somehow an insect or an animal that doesn't know there's even visible light, they don't know what vision is, somehow with water hitting their hand, they're going to discern that there's an image in that water, even though the data is hitting them at millions of electrons per second.
Stop the tape. Fred, the only time I ever stopped it on my own comment.
I
like that analogy.
What an analogy, right? Because they pretend, like in this book that Dr. Aguilar recommended to me, How Eyes Evolved, by his colleague at University of California, Ivan Schwab. They pretend that this is all magic, that they don't have to answer these questions, that it just happened. But the data stream coming from your photoreceptors to your brain, it's not projecting the image of a flower inside your brain. It's just sending a bunch of bits, basically.
Bits. It's like you said, water. Like imagine a hose with water going through it, and it gets to the other end, and it has to be processed to turn it back into an image. Was seen on the other side.
And oftentimes, I used to write for PC Week, very popular weekly computer publication. And we'd often compare the bandwidth of like your internet service to a hose. And a higher bandwidth was like a fire hose. And it's very similar to getting a cable, an Ethernet cable, and getting your signal and you looking at a picture of your grandkids on your computer screen. Well, what's coming through that cable is a bunch of bits.
Yeah.
It's really a bunch of electrons.
And it's fiber optics.
It's fiber optics. Yeah. Well, if you didn't know how to process it, it's just gibberish. It's just noise. It's like squirting a stream of water on your hand.
Yeah. But it's a signal. It's in a format that the eye understands to be able to interpret it. So it's in a language. How did that evolve?
How did the language evolve? Right. It has to encode the data at your retina, and it has to decode the data at your vision cortex. That is symbolic logic. The laws of physics have no symbolic logic functions. The laws of chemistry have no symbolic logic functions.
So just help people understand this isn't a one-to-one transfer. I'm looking at Bob right now. That image doesn't just automatically go from the tip of my eye and then appear in my brain. What happens is it becomes a whole bunch of
data.
Bits, data.
It becomes data.
It's like water, which is like flowing water. However you want to visualize it, it goes into the brain, and then it has to be processed,
unpackaged,
and then I see that image.
And understood. It has to be understood. Yeah. The whole system is so wildly complex.
I see your mouth moving, Bob. I mean, that's all new data coming in.
Right.
I can't imagine. It's amazing.
Millions,
to say this happened by chance.
Fred, millions of bits per second coming in of constantly changing images.
Trying to understand it and figure it out. I'm about to pass out.
In an insect that doesn't even know there's such a thing as visible light is supposed to take this incoming data stream and analyze it symbolically.
Yes.
And figure out what it's telling it. It's an absurdity to the... Darwin was right. He thought he was just speaking tongue in cheek. It's absurd to the highest degree to think that the eye could evolve by his mechanisms.
So it's like Lord Kelvin said, and I got that quote on my website, on my signature. The atheistic idea is so nonsensical, I cannot put it into words. I mean, I can't. I can't put it into words. To imagine how that happened by a natural process, it can't. It's not possible. You don't need 3 billion years like he wants us to have. Pretend you have 3 billion years. Can this happen? Well, the answer is no.
Right.
It can't happen. It's not
Googleplex years. Different universes. In a Google multiverse.
In a Yahoo different. Maybe Yahoo. Yeah, Yahoo. You know, it's because it's wishful thinking. It's storytelling.
It is magic. And to write a textbook used by colleges around the country, Evolution's Witness, How Eyes Evolved, and not address these issues is so irresponsible. It's proof this is blind faith in a religion of humanism.
Yep.
Okay. So let's continue.
Start the tape.
And they're going to symbolically decode that noise. And so your associate, Ivan Schwab, he sort of skipped that part. He begins with proteins that translate a single photon to a chemical electrical signal. He begins there. That's cheating. If he explained how eyes evolved, he's got to tell us how an insect that doesn't know, is it smell, touch, heat, sight, hearing, what is it, receives a stream of data and uses some symbolic logic function to interpret that data. He ignores that.
But wait a minute. That's the way all organisms deal with their own environment. All organisms get perception. If they don't have eyes, they use the organs of sense that they do have, whether it's taste or touch or feel or heat or whatever. You know, we have these different organisms, and our mental construct of the universe is a function of what input we get, whether it's auditory, visual, sensate, heat, and cold. I mean, that's just the way the world works. I mean, I don't know that that's relevant to any discussion we're having at all, Bob.
How did it start?
Bob, it started, the unicellular organisms began moving along, and those that had a photoreceptor that could find their way toward light did better than those that didn't, so those survived.
I'll retitle
those that have cilia that moved them a little bit quicker could get toward, those that had chemical receptors that could get them in the direction of food survive better. And so it went. Then you had multicellular organisms that could move quicker. Then you had multicellular organisms with more rapidly moving cilia. They could even move quicker yet to move toward food sources, decaying, you know, whatever. And so it went on and on and on throughout evolution, so that organisms that all of a sudden spontaneously developed some new little appendage that somehow found itself being useful for something or other, sometimes found a way to use that appendage to stake out an advantage over other things. Now, I know that you want to all have this done, and that you want to believe that your dear sweet Lord doesn't want people smoking marijuana and wants to throw them in jail. That would be the right thing to do. And as because you want more people smoking dope, and you want more people, and you're not at all concerned about the support of Christianity for all sorts of atrocities throughout history, for its retardation of science, whether it's geocentrism as opposed to heliocentrism and other things, whether it's evolutionary theory. But that's just a Christian mindset, that everything has to be a complete mystery. It's all explained by something, and you want to invoke science because, you know, science is very powerful. And so when one scientist disagrees with another scientist, you go, aha, because no good Christian would ever disagree with another good Christian, because it's all fundamentally true. Every word of the Bible is true.
Now, Fred, that ended abruptly because the entire conversation was an hour and a half, and people could hear that whole thing. It's painful. It's like listening to Aaron Ra,
yeah,
or Michael Shermer on Real Science Radio.
Well, I have an idea. You know that part where he was just so storytelling about how the eye evolved, how it went through those steps, and it really wasn't saying anything. You've got that fruitcake video where you play that music in the background. Yeah. I think that'd be a perfect idea through that sequence.
Yeah.
He's not saying anything. He's not providing any science.
What a video that is on our BEL televised
it
classics.
It is. That is a great one.
Yeah, video fruitcake. It is so fun.
It's funny.
What a classic. But Fred, real quick, before we conclude with a couple last points about the eye, this evening, you and I are speaking at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship on our list of evidence against the Big Bang.
Yep, 7 o'clock.
Be so much fun. Go to youngearth.org to get the details, the address, and all. Tomorrow night, a Voice for Brady concert with four singers from NBC's The Voice TV program in Denver for a benefit concert for A Voice for Brady.
And where's the details on that?
That is so exciting. ColoradoRightToLife.org.
Okay.
And you can get your tickets online. You got to be there. I can't wait for the concert. It'll be great. And if you could help Real Science Radio stay on the air, please go to our website. Click on the store or donations or our subscription service, Bible studies, topical videos, or browse our science department, and especially check out our new video on the global flood and the hydroplate theory. Fun stuff. Well, Fred, I have a couple things to close out this discussion of the evolution of the eye with Dr. Gary Aguilar. For one, again, the whole conversation, it goes on. He wants to talk about marijuana legalization.
The atrocity of Christians. Yeah.
Yes. It went on for an hour and a half, and it was just very difficult. A lot of people said switching topics and very angry, a lot worse than what we just heard here. So that's all online. You could get the link at today's show summary to listen to the whole thing. But it ended abruptly because we never got back to the evolution of the eye. So this is where we left off on that topic. Well, one thing that we didn't cover was the trochlea challenge. And this is another chapter that's missing from a book on the evolution of the eye.
Yeah.
So the trochlea, to explain it, now we asked an artist to draw a sketch of the human eye with the trochlea. That's a sling. If you picture the eyeball, there are muscles that are thick, like a thick band. Mm-hmm. And they pull the eye up, down, right, or left. And they have to be anchored somewhere to pull the eye in that direction. Well, the problem is, if you're thinking about your right eye, you want to turn it toward the left, but there's no room to anchor it there because your nose is there. So it's called the superior oblique. That muscle is strung through a loop, a sling.
Yeah.
It's called the trochlea. And it's anchored behind your eye. So it pulls from the back, but it turns your eye to the left because it goes through a sling.
Yeah.
It's such a simple design. It's utter simplicity. Any designer could come up with it. But I asked one of the world's most famous evolutionists, P.Z. Myers. In fact, we call this the P.Z. Myers Trochlea Challenge. I asked P.Z., for your career's worth of studying Darwinism, Can you tell us in rough terms, how might evolution, mutation, and natural selection, how might that evolve? Just a rough algorithm. Not exactly.
Yeah.
Just in broad terms. How could that sling evolve? He said, I don't know. Now, that's honest
of
him.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's amazing, and you got to go to the website to see this picture, but it shows the eyeball. It shows this, like you said, it's kind of a
muscle,
a thin muscle, and it goes through a sling that holds that in place. And remember, we've got how many eyes? Two.
In an inverted way.
Perfect parallelism.
Yes. And the problem for the Darwinists, the reason why P.Z. Myers said, I don't know how it could evolve via Darwinism, is because it's a system. It's not going to provide a survival advantage until it's functioning minimally. So to function minimally, you have to have the sling and you have to have your muscle narrow to a cord to fit through the loop.
It has to luckily find that sling.
Has to find it, has to go through, has to pull
through
the back.
And then become taut, right?
Yeah.
How does that all, there's no way.
Right. So there are multiple steps that show a degree of sophistication. And there are no series of small, minor modifications that give you this simple system. And that's why P.Z. Myers, after 30 years of studying Darwinism, he's a professor teaching it, says, I don't know. I bet you Jerry Coyne wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I bet you Richard Dawkins wouldn't know.
Gary Aguilar. I don't think he would know.
No. He's seen this. Yep. I sent this to him specially.
Okay.
He did not respond with, oh, here's how Darwinism could explain how the trochlea could form. Mm-hmm. Now, Fred, compare the issues that we bring up, like the origin of the initial photoreceptor cell in opsin,
mm-hmm.
the origin of the symbolic logic function of interpreting the data flow. These issues, they're fundamental issues. Compare that with Richard Dawkins. I'd like to include in our show summary of today's program a video of Richard Dawkins being interviewed explaining how the eye evolved. Fred, you haven't seen this yet. You're going to die.
Haven't.
You're going to die.
You got the fruitcake video music playing behind it?
We need it. He shows a piece of paper and he says, he's talking to a female reporter, and he says, let's pretend that this is your eye and it's just evolving light sensitivity. But you don't really know what direction the light is coming from. So it just begins to curve and curl, sort of like a funnel. And it's like this. And she's looking at it and she's saying, oh, yeah, I can see. He says it just goes like that.
Goodness.
And then it's more effective. Fred, my boys from when they were young, when people say things, they want to sound intelligent. Mm-hmm. Like the Bible says, professing themselves to be wise, they become fools. My kids do this. Oh, yeah. It's deep. It's really deep. Compare the issues that creationists bring up with the absurdities of the most sophisticated and qualified evolutionists.
Yep.
And you could see the lie of evolution versus the truth of Jesus Christ, that he created us male and female at the beginning of the creation, not after billions of years. Just as the Bible says.
Yeah. The eye is something that God made. It's his invisible attributes are clearly seen that by the things that are made, by the things God made, so that they are without excuse.
Yes.
Without excuse. That doesn't mean they have a little bit of an excuse, a 1 out of 100 excuse. They are without excuse. This evidence is powerful. Mm. You got to go see this trochlea challenge image. Use it, show it to your friends. It's great.
And Fred, I have a friend who does podcasts on creation, Richard Walker from Tennessee, and he wrote an article on this topic. He closed it by saying, there are none so blind as those who will not see, or to quote the prophet Jeremiah, tell them, hear this, you foolish people who have no understanding, saith the Lord, people who have eyes but do not discern, who have ears but do not perceive, you should fear me, says the Lord.
Yes. And when it says you should fear me, I mean, does that mean be afraid, or does
means
that mean
respect?
Respect, exactly.
Honor.
Yes.
Humble yourself before your Creator God and obey Him.
Yep.
Love Him. Trust Him.
The beginning of knowledge is?
The fear of the Lord. It's the beginning of wisdom.
Yes.
Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thank you, Bob.
See you in just a few hours at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Can't wait. Our list of the evidence against the Big Bang. Our website, realscienceradio.com. Please support us to help us stay on the air. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.